been in women's basketball.
We're going to go to softball.
We'll go to football. I mean, football or softball.
Okay, that's right. See, I was climbing up.
So that's what I was waiting to hear what their
opinion is. Better than I deserve.
Oh, yeah.
I can still say that.
I hear you.
Oh, yes.
So this,
Well,
looked
that
up.
Hey, how are you doing?
How you doing?
Well, I've got two right now. This is my new one.
Rotator cluster.
I'm going to try.
So many stuff is not true.
I just got a new computer.
They do.
Good morning.
I'm self-insured and I said, I've been tough on you guys lately. Rotator cluster. Yeah, I didn't. Since I did my knee last year, I thought I'd do the upper part of my body.
Oh, heel.
You know, I told my office the other day, I said,
"Don't throw it above the head.
Always rises." Get my fist, Carl.
Oh, they took it. They just took it a few little longer this time.
I'm sure it did.
This one, I mean, I expected it all year.
Oh, yeah. Tell me. Especially
back I'm sure you did.
Especially back in December.
Absolutely. Wednesday.
That tournament they played in, they were 0-2.
Questionable.
Y'all get as excited when the golf team wins a national championship?
I'm working on it right now. I don't
know.
Y'all get
still working on it.
Y'all get excited when the golf team wins an ACC championship or anything? I don't hear the enthusiasm.
Do they have a golf team?
How about the rifle team?
How about tennis?
How about tennis?
Hey, Dave, good morning. This is the email that Steve sent out. Yeah, thanks. So I don't know if you want it or need it. That would be helpful to you.
Okay.
Okay, but I'll just leave it.
That's the man to do that with.
Well, good morning, everyone. My name is Daryl Moss, Chair of the Water Allocation Committee. I'm going to call this meeting to order. I'd like to welcome everyone here this evening.
Woo!
This morning. that's a sign of the day I have ahead of me. Executive Order Number 1 mandates that the Chair inquire as to whether any member knows of any conflict of interest or appearance of conflict of interest with respect to matters before the Commission. If any member knows of a conflict or interest of or appearance of a conflict, please state so at this time. Members, anything? We have such a light agenda, I will be surprised if we do. Okay, fantastic. And before we get going, I will tell you, maybe I am still a little bit shaken. I had a very interesting encounter this morning at about 1:43 a.m. with a pit bull that was after my dog. So that was scary. But I survived. And the dog did, too,
but
so that's
good.
You
didn't get much sleep.
I did not. I couldn't go back to sleep. My heart was racing. At any rate. All right. So we've called a meeting to order. As we all know, our minutes, we literally just got them last night, so I wanted to give everybody an opportunity this morning before we went too much further to take an extra minute to review the minutes before we call for action on those minutes. So let's just take a couple of minutes. Thank you. give me the sign when you're ready.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes.
Second.
I have a motion and a second to approve the minutes. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Thank you. Do we have any revisions or additions to today's agenda? If not, we will proceed with the informational item, which is the Central Coastal Plain Capacity Use Area Annual Status Report. And Mr. Nat Wilson is going to be delivering that, I believe. Okay. And just by way of note, I think Mr. Reeder has to step out here just a few minutes. Apparently, he's got some more important folks to talk to other than us this morning. Some folks across the...
Not more important here today.
Sure. Yeah. All right.
Good morning. Good morning. Not evening.
Morning.
Good
morning.
As you've heard, I'm here to give you an information item on the Central Coastal Plain Capacity Use Area. I spoke to you about a year and a half ago, last, about this issue. And my name is Nat Wilson. I want to talk to you today about just what is the Central Coastal Plain Capacity Use Area, where it is, what counties are regulated, how they're regulated. There's a permitting program that requires anyone using more than 100,000 gallons per day to get a water use permit from the Division of Water Resources. And some of those permits also require reductions from certain aquifers, reductions of withdrawal. There are various compliance and reporting measures that I want to talk to you about today. We're moving toward a paperless system, so that's kind of exciting and has with it added complications. But I believe it's going to mean a lot more accurate data and data that gets into our databases faster. I want to talk to you a little bit about conservation measures assessment that we're involved in now. Of course, I want to talk to you about what infrastructure improvements have been made and the costs associated with those and who's going to be part of those various improvements, new sources of water that have been brought online. I also want to talk to you about what information is available to you online through our webpage. And I want to talk to you about the rebounding of groundwater levels that we're witnessing. I mentioned this a year and a half ago. I'm sure you all have that in your memories, that we were just beginning to see the effects of a new source of water that had come online. The Neuse Regional Water and Sewer Authority was beginning to use the Neuse River, and we were beginning to see the effects of that withdrawal was allowing them to reduce their demand on the Cretaceous aquifers, and so we were beginning to see water rise in those aquifers. So what is the CCPCUA? It's 15 counties in the Central Coastal Plain. It's not a very inventive title. CCPCUA is Central Coastal Plain Capacity Use Area. So those 15 counties cover an over 8,000 square mile area. We have currently 236 permit holders and 81 registrations in 2009. I didn't put 2010 registrations up there because people are still in the act of registering with us. That list of people is not complete for 2010. As I said earlier, the permits are required for anyone using more than 100,000 gallons per day any day of the year. And registrations for groundwater withdrawals between 10,000 and 100,000 are required. And anyone using more than 10,000 gallons per day of surface water is required to register as well.
Does that include all categories?
Yes.
Municipalities, agriculture, everything?
Yeah, any water user. Yeah, and please ask questions as we go along. The reductions I spoke of earlier have to do with the Cretaceous aquifers, and they this map, it's a little tough to see. The 15 counties are supposed to be shaded there. But overlying those 15 counties are a series of Cretaceous aquifer zones, or reduction zones, as we call them. From the left-hand side or west side of the map, we have the declining water level zone. The dewatering zone is in the middle in a kind of a brick pattern, and then saltwater encroachment zone on the east side of the area. So what we had to do was figure out a way of getting people using these Cretaceous aquifers to reduce their demand on those aquifers. And so we chose, the rules chose a system of assigning an approved base rate to each of those users. And that approved base rate was either calendar use, 1997 calendar use, the amount of water they withdrew from those aquifers in 1997, or a year that stretched from August 1st of 1999 through July 31st of 2000. So depending on what the system was doing at that time, we chose the higher of those two rates as their approved base rate. And the reductions were from that rate downward. Depending on which zone, it could be between 30 and 75% of a reduction in three phases. So 10, 10, and 10, or 25, 25, and 25% reductions from the approved base rate. So at 75%, that's a very pretty substantial reduction in the withdrawals from that those aquifers. So on an individual basis, their system might see something like what that diagram shows you, where you have an approved base rate. In this case, it was one that was is shown in that dashed line, horizontal dashed line. That was obviously chosen based on usage between 1999 and 2000. And as we go forward from there through 2020 in this graph, you see the three phases of reduction in 2008, 2013, and 2018. And as they reduce from their Cretaceous aquifer sources, they need to bring on alternate sources of water. And that's shown in the blue and the green, respectively. So imagine individual systems facing this obstacle. We've seen that there are, in response, there have been regional solutions where various systems have gotten together and formed a regional water supply, as well as individual systems using other shallower aquifers, a new well field, for instance, in a shallower aquifer. The shallower aquifer is preferred because it will recharge much more quickly and is a much more sustainable source of water. So these regional systems have come forth and are using surface water. In some cases, those individual systems are using shallower wells. With shallower aquifers and those shallower wells comes the need for, and surface water comes the need for better water treatment. And that's obviously much more costly. The other thing that's occurring is many more interconnections between the systems. So let's look at it from a whole. That combined ABR is about 57.3, if we total it all. And those were established, as I said, from their annual usage rates in either 1997 or 99-2000. Going forward from there, we have in 2008 a combined ABR of 44.5 million gallons per day. And at 2013, it would be about 32 million gallons per day. And then in 2018, about 19 million gallons per day. So that you can see that's a very substantial reduction in use from those aquifers, the Cretaceous aquifers. But hopefully it will lead to a sustainable use of those aquifers and the alternate sources of water that come online through work either independently or with regional groups will allow for whatever growth that they incur. I wanted to show you some of the reports we're getting from the various systems. So this is obviously off of our web page. You don't need to look at all those numbers, nor should you be able to read them all. But I chose 2009 as a year to look at. You can choose any of those years. The tables will be rebuilt for you. But I want to hone in on the bottom right-hand table in this on this page. And those, you can see a little bit clearer in this new image. And that 57.3 million gallons per day is circled on the left down there as the yearly withdrawal. It's actually a daily withdrawal, but it's associated with the annual base rate or the approved base rate permit holders. And in 2018, that again will reduce to 19.3 million gallons per day. So what we're seeing from 2009 is, and as has been reported to us, is that we're currently seeing about 27.5 million gallons per day being withdrawn from those aquifers. So we're moving in the direction of that 19.3. So that's really good news. The other thing I want you to see there is a comparison between the amount reported by all permit holders. There's an arrow next to it at 143.5 million gallons per day is being reported. I want you to compare that number to the amount being reported by who has registered with us, the users, again, of more than 10,000 gallons per day. This is all groundwater use. And you can see that that's roughly 10%. And so that's of importance because we want to make sure that this permit program is capturing enough of the withdrawals in the Central Coastal Plain to be to actually reach its goal. And I think that if we see just 10% of the usage coming from registrations, we're capturing the majority of the usage under the permitting program and we'll attain our goal. The last thing I want you to see on that graphic is sort of an issue that is both good and bad, and that is that if you total and under the registration column on the far right, total the withdrawals from each of those aquifers, you'll note that the total comes to about 1.7 million gallons per day, and you'll see but the total underneath it is 14.3. Well, the difference, about 12.6 million gallons per day, comes into play because we have Department of Agriculture reporting usage to us by county. And so we can't assign the aquifers, the usage to specific aquifers in that case, because they have a non-disclosure policy. So it's good to see the total, but we don't have very much definition on that because of that non-disclosure policy. Just a little frustration on my part. Yes?
Three questions before you leave that. First of all, I know you may not be the right person. You may not be the right person to ask this, but on the non-disclosure policy, do you know what the basis of that is?
I happen to have written it down because I wouldn't have remembered if I'd stood up here without it. It's, again, by county or by whatever the reporting grouping is. We have from our statewide report from them, we often get the data by river basin as well. And so or by some portion of a river basin.
Yeah, the basis for it comes from the federal census folks. They're following the same criteria that the Census Bureau follows when they collect data. That's a very tight regulation there. They're very protective of that.
The numbers are if there's one operation that's greater than 60% of the total or there are less than three operations, they won't report it. Okay. So in the county grouping, if there's one operation in Beaufort County that it's greater than 60% of the total, then they won't report any usage for the county.
Okay. The second question.
Can I follow up on that?
Sure.
I don't understand the rationale. I mean, what prevents them? What does it matter if they report? What keeps the secrecy about it? What's the justification? I know that's the rule, but I don't understand what the security issue. What's the security issue that they don't make that information available to the state? Is that that's what I'm.
Honestly,
is that what you were getting to, Mr. Chairman? I mean, I understand the rule, but why?
I don't have an answer. You'd have to talk to Ag Statistics about that.
I think it goes beyond Ag Statistics. I think in the Farm Bill it prevents disclosure of what's happening on individual farms. There may be two different rules here, but
There's a policy basis of some sort, a policy reason of some sort.
But it does, just to be clear, that does not affect our permit requirements.
No, it does not. If farm is using more than 100,000 gallons per day, they still fall under our permitting process.
All right. Second question is on this, the one you lifted up. What is surficial for surficial? S-U-R-F-I-C-I-L.
We call it surficial.
Surficial.
It's what you might call the water table aquifer or the unconfined aquifer.
And then would you go back a slide before you lifted this? And in the top right-hand corner, 9 dewatering, 221 million gallons max daily. What sort of mines does that relate to, and where are they generally? You have any idea? That's a lot of water.
It is a lot of water. The mines, any of the mines, really, from sand pits to rock quarries.
Is that principally what it would be, sand pits and rock quarries? Anybody know that?
Also, PCS phosphate is a fairly large amount of that.
Yeah, right. Right.
So it's water that's being removed so they can dry mine the pit.
All right. Thank you.
Welcome. Any other questions before we move on? I mentioned going paperless before. This has been a goal of ours, and primarily to increase the accuracy of what's getting into our databases. As you can imagine, we receive paper reports from people, and then transcribing that, typing that into a database, we cause some errors to be added. This I don't intend you to read this, but this is what the permit holder would see as they go into our reporting system. And it allows us to get them to register and apply for permits, and also report withdrawals, water levels, chloride values, and any surface water that's being purchased. That goes back to water we're trying to keep track of for the the interbasin transfer certificates that have come into existence in this area. Anyway, they can come into this page and from here go to various reporting forms. We're really encouraged because this system came online in early November, and we already have, we think, about 40% participation. Some people are still sending in their forms. Some people are not really savvy on the Internet. But I think that's a very fast move toward using these forms. I mentioned also that we are beginning to look at conservation measures. The rules set forth, again, I don't expect you to read that. I'll point to a certain portion of it in a minute. But the rules set forth minimum conservation measures that various types of water users will need to adopt on some schedule. And it can be different, I think, for different systems, depending on how many people they have, what type of system they are. And what we're trying to do is get the most updated information about their conservation measures through this. This is another one of our reporting systems, that they can go in and make adjustments to this so that it reflects their current conservation measures. One of the things I wanted to point out here is that there's a table partway down on that page. So we're pretending we're Kinston, sort of prying into their business a little bit. But you can see that there's a table that is put together, and this is a table that comes from the water withdrawals that we have in the system associated with Kinston. On the left-hand side, they're associated with their permit. And on the right-hand side, information from their local water supply plan. So it's information that is kept in two separate places in our system, in Division of Water Resources, but it's being brought together here to show them what percent unaccounted for water they have in their system in those various years, from 1997 to the most current year, 2009. And you can see that Kinston does very well. You may be able to read that. It's a little over 7% unaccounted for in 2009. But this gives the folks a chance to look at what data in a slightly different context they put in for local water supply plans, for instance, and what they've given us, and see that there's, when you mix them, there may be some kind of some strange percent unaccounted for numbers that come forth. And hopefully they'll see that and they'll go back in. For instance, if the problem is some typo in the local water supply plan data, they can go back into that system and make that correction. So we're hoping that by giving more of this data back to the permit holders and the people who do our local water supply plans, that we'll end up with a much more accurate system. Let's talk a little bit about what alternate sources of water have come online. And we mentioned earlier Neuse Regional Water and Sewer Authority. That's just a couple of pictures of their facility. But first off, we'll talk about Greenville Utilities Commission. They have been using Tar River water for quite some time. You know, of course, about the IBT certificate that has just been approved. That will be fully implemented once conservation efforts meet the provisions in the CCPCUA rules. They're supplying water, or will be supplying water, to Greene County and to Farmville. They're already supplying water to towns like Winterville and several others in Pitt County. Neuse Regional Water, as we've talked about before, has come together with, I think it's 8 systems. They're currently under an IBT certification process. As we said earlier, they're getting their water from the Neuse River. We'll talk a little bit more about them in a few minutes. Martin County is one that is coming together. It's an association between the county and the town of Williamston, and they'll be using the Roanoke River looks to be a run of river intake at last count.
Can I ask a question? That based on what you're just saying here, the numbers you showed earlier where we're having these significant reductions in the aquifer usage, is that primarily coming as a result of these efforts?
Yes, exactly. There's a PDF file on our website that I'll talk about a little later, but is available to you off the website under miscellaneous items under the Central Coastal Plain Capacity Use Area page, where you see a complete list of what alternate sources of water have been created through this process. Just talk about a few others. There are several permit holders that have moved to use more water from the PD aquifer. I'm not going to list all those, except the town of Laverne, of course. John Kraft is in our audience. He's the town manager from the town of LaGrange. Several others have developed new well fields in the Castle Hayne Aquifer. Again, those are listed. The one picture there is from the town of Jacksonville. Again, this has all come about since the rules became effective. So this is very exciting stuff, and those are real examples. And lots of money being spent As you can see, I'll skip to the bottom there because I just mentioned it. If you total all those investments, they come to a little over $330 million. And I think that's a pretty conservative value that people have, these systems have invested in their alternative supplies to the Cretaceous aquifers. Yes, sir.
Is the Smithfield Foods plant in Tar Heel in this capacity use area?
No.
That's a different.
No, that is in Bladen County, just to the southwest. So when I came to you a year and a half ago, I know you distinctly remember that. Get back. That little diamond-shaped mark, technology has taken over, that's where we were back then. So we'll go back a year and a half. Okay, now we're there. And what I showed you was this downward-sloping withdrawal pattern from the far left in 1997. This is in the sort of brownish-red color. Orange, kind of what that is, rust color, downward sloping as from about 9 million gallons per day to about 6 million gallons per day. And then it takes a pretty distinctive drop to what looks like somewhere in the neighborhood of 2 million gallons per day. Well, that, of course, is the Neuse Regional Water and Sewer Authority intake coming online and making up of water. So they were able to reduce their withdrawals from the Cretaceous aquifer, which is what that is a measure of, that orange color, and replace it with Neuse River water. This well that is in blue is showing that upward trend during that period from 1997 to 2008, eight and a half. It's tracking that reduction in use. We associate that reduction in use because they've lost industry in the area, various other factors. But it's very distinctive, it has a very distinctive upward tick as you get into that area where the Neuse Regional Water and Sewer intake came online. And so we're at that diamond now. Since then, it's risen significantly more. And so you'll see that we're now at a level we haven't seen in that well since 1983. So that's a huge change. And in this area, all because we've begun using a different source of water, the Neuse River. So it's very exciting to see the aquifers are responding as we would have predicted. And maybe even a little faster than we were thinking they would respond. And so that's very exciting. We're going to continue to watch this and continue to use our monitoring well network to track how water levels are changing as a result of not just the Neuse Regional system, but also these other alternative supplies. As they come online, we're reducing the stress on the Cretaceous aquifers. Another way to look at that is to do a map of what we call the potentiometric surface for an aquifer, in this case the Black Creek aquifer. A potentiometric surface, is sort of an imaginary surface where we're connecting the dots, connecting all the water level information from the various wells we have in the Black Creek aquifer, and we're defining a surface. And that surface right now is this very large cone of depression. Well, if you take that surface and you subtract that from, subtract these 2 years, since November 2010 date and November 2007, you subtract one from the other, you get what looks like a mound. Water levels have recovered up to, say, about 40 feet in the center there. So this is a map of the recovery in the Black Creek aquifer. We're subtracting one potentiometric surface from another. And it reflects the rebound or the recovery in that aquifer over time. So obviously the one that's centered in Lenoir County, where Kinston is and where the treatment plant, new surface water treatment plant is, that reflects that new source of water. But we're also beginning to see little bumps in that recovery mound near Cove City and near Jacksonville. And those are associated with other sources of water. In Cove City, that's, of course, where New Bern gets its water from the Cretaceous system. That recovery is because New Bern is now making use of a Castlehaine aquifer well field. The same is true for Jacksonville, who's making use of a new well field in Castlehaine. So we're beginning to see other sources of water coming online, which are replacing the Cretaceous sources and causing less stress on those sources, which is reflected in both the hydrographs, as we saw earlier, and in this recovery map. Let's look at the Upper Cape Fear. I've got the Black Creek one in there also, just to confuse you. The Upper Cape Fear shows a similar mound, differently shaped. And that's to be expected because the different systems use one aquifer over another. So, for instance, in the Upper Cape Fear map, there's a mound or ridge that heads up toward the left of the main pit. That's associated with Belle Arthur. Belle Arthur's water system is making use of the Upper Cape Fear, but now they're getting some of their water from the Neuse River. And so you're going to see the recovery in the Upper Cape Fear map because of Belle Arthur and where their wells are, but you're not going to see that same recovery in the Black Creek map. So this is really kind of exciting stuff for people like me, but everybody else.
Just a question. I guess considering the fact that we've been generally in a drought condition and generally in the south in there, has this recovery been pretty amazing compared?
Yeah, I would. Droughts are, well, droughts have got nothing to do with what's going on in the Cretaceous aquifers, except that during a drought, people tend to water their lawns more, and if anything, there's higher use associated with not so much drinking more, but they're watering their lawns. They're making use of that water to keep their lawns green, unless systems have rules in place to guard against that. So, but whether there's a flood out there in the coastal plain or we have a drought out there in the coastal plain, the Cretaceous aquifers are ignorant.
Well, yeah, I'm generally more thinking about recharge zones and the operation of the aquifer over a long period of time. The discussion has always been that these systems respond slowly. That's one of the reasons why it was designated capacity use area many years ago. That's but right. It seems to be that these measures and surface water supplies and conservation has been pretty dramatic in terms of the recovery of the aquifer.
I think what we can safely say is that the biggest influence on the Cretaceous aquifers is the amount of water we're withdrawing. There's a one-to-one correlation between how much we withdraw from them and how they are impacted. So you're right. If there's a drought going on, there's less water entering into the superficial aquifer or water table aquifer. But there's so little of that that actually makes it down into the Cretaceous aquifers that we don't see the impact of that. And it's over a much longer period of time. It takes a lot longer for that infiltration, that rainfall to infiltrate in and become part of the confined Cretaceous aquifers than it is to just begin turning off some of those wells and you see a much faster recovery. It's something that can occur in a matter of months, weeks, days for cutting back on withdrawals. But recharge is something that takes place over many, many, probably hundreds or thousands of years. Yes, sir.
Talking about the recovery on the Cretaceous aquifers, movement toward superficial aquifers, Are you monitoring what's happening on the superficial aquifer?
Yes, very definitely. We have a network of wells, and that at each station we have wells that monitor Upper Cape Fear, Black Creek, all the other aquifers up to the superficial aquifer at that same station. So although there are some stations that lack some of those wells, we're moving toward completing that so that we have, not only do we have wells in the right places to monitor this situation, make sure we're not just shifting the problem to another aquifer, but we also have those in place so we can see how water moves through the system, how it moves from the shallower aquifers to the deeper aquifers, and how this recovery is affecting the deeper aquifers, and how more use of, for example, the Castle Hayne aquifer or the PD aquifer could cause problems. We want to guard against that as well. And on that note, this is the Lower Cape Fear, which is also one of the Cretaceous aquifers, and you can see that on the map. There's a blue line there which shows you the boundary of the Central Coastal Plain capacity use area. So this is a recovery we're seeing that isn't even associated with the Central Coastal Plain. But I wanted to show it to you to show you that we are monitoring these other aquifers. One, this network of wells we have is more than just monitoring this situation in the 15 counties, and it is more than just monitoring the situation in the Black Creek and the Upper Cape Fear. This is a recovery we're seeing in the Lower Cape Fear, and it's associated with something happening in Virginia. There's an international paper plant in Franklin, Virginia, that has closed down, and we're beginning to see the effects of that in North Carolina. We've got a couple wells there that are showing recovery associated with that, and we think that that will begin to spread into more and more wells and further into North Carolina as time goes on. Again, that's the recovery we're seeing from August 2008 through November 2010. Online, we've got lots of things for you to look at. We hope that you do. We've got all sorts of information that's been reported to us from our permit holders, our registrants, their groundwater levels, the withdrawal data that they report in. Of course, we also have all information from our network of wells. We're moving toward this paperless permit application registration reporting process, so we're hoping that that not only improves the accuracy, but also gets stuff to us quicker. The CCPCUA webpage is a link off the DWR homepage. It's written out there on the link, Central Coastal Plain Capacity Use Area, and I think you all should be able to find that. There's plenty of groundwater data available. Again, that really is mostly about what we're finding in our own network of wells, but that's another link that you can pursue. We've put out an assessment report in 2008, the two status reports in 2004 and 2009. We'll have another assessment report in 2013. The status reports are on a five-year basis, so it'll be 2014 for the next status report. And, of course, anytime you want to hear from me, I know you've not next meeting, but maybe that one after that. And, of course, we have that paper I mentioned earlier, which is just a list of what alternative supplies have been developed in the CCP. And that's good. We updated it in February of this year, so we've got very recent information there. That's, of course, is the web address, www.ncwater.org. And this is just some hooligans that this is our groundwater management section, blacking two people, one who's the photographer and another who is, for some reason, out of this picture. I'm not sure what happened. But that's us. We're a very small group, but we do a whole lot for the state, I believe. Any other questions?
You're not performing community service there, are you?
No, we are. Tom Meters left us, but he's in the foreground on the left. He's giving us some misinformation about something.
in the world of things, I had a comment, but I'll say it's a poor dog that won't wag its own tail, so I guess. But do appreciate the work y'all do. You do a great job. One of the things, I don't want to be esoteric about it, the hydrology of that system, or those systems down there, the surface, the superficial aquifer, the confined aquifers, the surface water, all of that system obviously interrelated, interlinked.
That's right.
And in the past, these systems were being, the confined aquifer were being pumped as it was a water supply, and that reservoir was being reduced, and those were ending up in discharge systems, and so it was like a supplemental flow to some degree in the river. There's still consumptive uses in the watershed, but essentially they were being pumped up, used, and then discharged back to the superficial aquifer or to the surface waters. And that shift in hydrology could have some effects, not necessarily bad effects, but could have some effects on saltwater intrusion, changing of salinity in the systems that are there. And I'm assuming, you know, you have a good relationship with Division of Water Quality. So,
right.
Has there been conversations about looking at the data in that system, particularly related to chlorides and salinity, to see if there's been any kind of shifts in those coastal systems?
We haven't really had conversations about that, but we have, of course, in our division this modeling, a river basin modeling approach, as you know, and I know that DWQ is heavily involved in that, and so we're hoping that I think what I hear you say is because we're less of that, less water is entering, was normally withdrawn from the Cretaceous aquifers, is entering as discharge to the surface water, how will that affect that system, the surface water system? And I think my guess at the outset would be that it was a lot of water, a lot of very clean water that was being withdrawn for the specific purpose of providing water to the citizens of that area. But in relative terms, it's a pretty small amount of water when you think about how much water flows down the Neuse River, for instance. So I'm guessing that we wouldn't really see much of a change, but it's certainly something that we'll look into as we do our
I mean, that's my impression as well, relative to the amount of water going through the surface system and right. The discharge through the drainage basin. But that's a question that could come up.
Exactly.
Salinity and the effect on nursery areas and other productive areas in the estuary is always an issue.
Right. I agree. Very good question.
All right. Are you going to post this presentation?
It is on.
It is on our website. Okay. Yes, sir. On our water allocations.
I haven't found it.
Okay.
I don't see it either.
I've been searching for it.
We will today.
There is a. If you go to the water allocation committee link off of the www.ncwater.org, you're there. Under I believe it's presentations.
Should be there. If it's not, we'll post it today.
Okay, well, I'll try again.
But I was on a different server yesterday, but I looked at it. I tried to bring it up. I never could get it up. And I don't know if the situation was is the server I was on was not capable of the download rate. But I did find the presentation, but I couldn't load it. So
I think it was just you were locked out of it.
Probably.
Otherwise,
that was it.
They locked you out of it.
They locked me. Well, I did find it though.
Committee members, do we have other questions of Nat? Nat, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
I'm really excited about aquifer recovery. I didn't know a whole lot about that until today, so it's exciting. I'm joking with you. It is exciting.
It is exciting.
It is exciting. Okay. Folks, that's really all that we had as informational items on our agenda for today. There's one other thing that I will take Chairman's preference to add. On February 3rd, Chairman, if I got that date wrong, just let me know, but I had it on my calendar for February 3rd. Chairman Smith convened a meeting that Mr. Hall and Dr. Moreau and I participated in for the Western Wake Partners. They were having issues with their IBT compliance issue. and I'm sure I'm going to leave somebody out, but in that meeting, we had representatives from Cary, Apex, Chatham County, Progress Energy, and obviously we had staff. Colleen was there, Tom Reeder, I believe. Who did I miss, Steve? I think that was it. But I was going to call on the chair, if he would, just to kind of give us his impressions of that meeting. We've had some significant forward movement since that time. Chatham County has since signed the easement, so that was a really big part of this whole problem. But the chair, I thought, did a great job of getting all the players around the table, allowing them an opportunity to kind of lay out their issues and concerns. And as we saw a couple weeks ago or a week or so ago, had some really great forward progress. Mr. Chair.
Well, there's not much to add other than to say we call this meeting not to try to broker a resolution or to mediate or discuss or to resolve it, but principally to try to get all the players in one room together and go around the room and have everybody talk about what their issues were. And then be in a position to ask questions of each other. Putting the meeting together was an idea that came from Dr. Moreau, which I appreciate. And there was good attendance there, which I appreciated. And I don't know whether that meeting sparked the resolution between Western Wake Partners and Chatham County, but Western Wake Partners in Chatham County have come to a resolution, so it looks like those IBT issues are on track to come to a successful end. So thank everybody that was involved in that.
Mr. Hall or Dr. Moreau, did you have anything you wanted to add to that?
I thought it was a skillfully moderated meeting, and most of the issues got laid out and became apparent that alternative was the only one that was available within any reasonable amount of time and with any reasonable assurance that there would be a positive conclusion.
I would agree with what Dr. Moreau said. I think prior to the meeting, there may have been some thoughts in some people's minds that there were other alternatives other than going through Chatham County. I think it became pretty clear that those alternatives had been very diligently analyzed before the meeting, during the process, and they had been eliminated for good reasons. So it became pretty clear that what was being proposed was pretty much the only alternative left.
Fantastic. Forrest, did you have something?
Well, not on that particular subject, even though I think that's a great job on where that was a very contentious issue, and glad to see that done. I just wanted to make the observation, I guess, on the coastal area, capacity use area, just that this is a success story. The Environmental Management Commission, we get blamed for a lot of things we don't do right and that we fail on. I think Dave may have been when Dave was on the commission when this was designated, or it may have been before, but this has been a long-term process of transferring resources to, I think, more renewable source. Surface water is certainly limited too, but those confined aquifers are basically reservoirs of water that are not necessarily replaced very quickly, and that was the concern that they were going to be gone, and I think this represents a tremendous step in terms of improving that situation, and the capacity use designation did exactly what it was supposed to do to benefit that. So I think the commission and those that were on it at that time did a great job in initiating that, and the staff's done a wonderful job implementing that. There's been a lot of money spent on it, but I think it's accomplished what it was supposed to do.
Yeah. I think most of the credit goes to the staff for years of interaction with the communities. And one of the real advantages of the Capacity Use Act that maybe we don't take advantage of as much as we should is that it does allow for planning. It is not a purely regulatory matter, but you get a study, identify problems. You don't just drop a regulatory hammer, but it
does allow for finding solutions before writing rules that implement those. I think we probably ought to use it a little more systematically than we do, but that's another discussion.
I'm sure we'll have that opportunity in the future. I hope.
Well, this whole movement toward river basin modeling and we'll be able to support the decisions as to whether or not it's necessary.
Okay. Any concluding remarks by committee members? I have one. My presence here tomorrow at the full EMC meeting is kind of in question right at the moment. I have a responsibility at the job that pays my mortgage, so that's probably I need to take care of that one, but I'm working on it, Steve. I'll have that nailed down hopefully before close of business today. But I've asked Les if he will deliver the water allocation report if I happen not to be here. All right. If there's nothing else, I will call this meeting adjourned.
But every time I say, I didn't say that because every time I say it, I'm going to put the mouth on it.
I couldn't find it.
Oh, you're exactly right.
Ah!
Yeah,
just hired a new vice president that I'm reporting to. Office. He got to the office at 8, so I'm heading there to meet him. I've not met him yet, so
he'll take care of that.
But he's got a thing tomorrow that I really don't need to meet him. So.
Yeah, but we all have to take care of our daughters.
I don't want to go. Not that bad.
So, good luck.
I'll see you later.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Well, that's the same thing. We're into water and sea water.